Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thanks for joining me today for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Today we'll be covering three stories in international education that have crossed the news feeds over the last few days. And we'll be showing you some ways that this data can potentially be interpreted and these stories can be used to improve how you do what you do in international student recruitment and admissions. So today we're going to be covering stories that are taking a broad look at the global higher ed landscape and how it's changing from a recent Inside Higher Ed event in DC. We'll also look at how in the UK they are beginning to defend international student recruitment and kind of using some common arguments that pop up related to cultural xenophobia, public paranoia over immigration, and how those issues are resolving themselves. We'll take a look at how that's evolving in the UK and some really useful arguments, I think, that we'd be well served to take on board as we look to defend what we do in international education here in the United States. And the final piece that we'll cover today is actually on a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and it's on how we communicate with our prospective students in international education. So I'd like to share with you what we're doing here at SMIE Consulting, and this podcast, this live chat, is certainly one of the ways that we do that. We're here every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. These videos are obviously archived on our Facebook page for SMIE Consulting, but they're also available on YouTube if that's your preferred platform for watching videos. We also podcast this each week, so if you would rather not see me but hear the content, that's great too. We're happy to have you, and the podcast is available on all major platforms from iTunes to Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and Podbean. So look forward to helping you out today with some of the content that we're going to be covering from these three news stories, and hopefully some of these will provide some nuggets for you and your institution to help you better deal with the issues you're facing in international education. So again, thanks for joining me. My name is Marty Bennett. I'm the president and founder of SMIE Consulting at Social Media and International Education Consulting. And today we're going to cover these three topics today, and we'll kick off first with a story from Inside Higher Ed. They hosted an event this past week that was called Global Higher Ed in Changing Times. So it was a panel that they hosted with some folks from universities, from Penn State, from Dickinson College, and University in Qatar. That's Hamad bin Khalifa University in Qatar. So these three panelists, along with some other experts, including Peggy Blumenthal from IIE and others, presented their feedback on how times have changed in international education, not just in the United States, but abroad as well. It dealt with a lot of the issues that we've covered here in the past, but what I think is what's coming out of this, this particular report, is obviously dealing with kind of the big picture, 20,000 foot view of how things are shaping up in the U.S. There, Peggy Blumenthal shared the data from Open Doors this past November, but also a recent survey that was done in the fall of 500 colleges, where half were either declining, or the other half were either flat or increasing their international enrollment. So it looked, the focus of this panel in the U.S. at least focused on the expanding gap between the haves and the have-nots in terms of international student enrollments. So it's interesting to see where the panelists certainly that came down on for this event really perhaps are probably the haves more than the have-nots. The survey that IIE conducted this past fall in conjunction with nine other higher ed association organizations. Decided that for those institutions that were experiencing decline, there were three major factors. Visa application process or visa denials were cited by 83% of respondents. Social and political environment in the United States, 60% cited this. and a competition from other institutions in other countries. And these factors were, I think I've seen, certainly I've heard that from almost everybody I've talked to that is in that declining boat, visa issues, certainly at the institution I was most recently running international operations, that was the biggest cause of declines, is visa denials, along with some other issues, but drops in Saudi students as well. But what we saw, in addition to the visa denials, in the last certainly 2 years, you're seeing the impact of less kind, less gentle United States when it comes to the welcoming atmosphere the government, at least, is projecting to prospective international students and their families. So that is certainly something that resonates well, and we all know about You Are Welcome Here and how that campaign is fought to counter that that view. But the last piece on competition from institutions in other countries is certainly probably the factor that has been lingering underneath all of these issues that institutions are facing in the United States. The competition for students internationally has grown, and we've talked about that on this podcast many times before in these chats. So we certainly see a lot of interest there. Thanks for joining, Larry. Good to see you. Hope you're well, and appreciate you sharing this video out to your colleagues earlier. When I talk about the changing landscape of international education in the United States, this event that Inside Higher Ed sponsored certainly reflects a lot of those issues that we're seeing. But when you look at, and we talked to, the press certainly tends to focus on the negatives and the institutions that are really struggling, and a lot in the Midwest are struggling. That's where the largest percentage of institutions that reported the declines in the IIA survey were located. But when you look at the other side of the coin, the 50% that were either flat or increasing in their international student populations, there are three main reasons that they cited why they have seen increases. We're looking at more active recruitment efforts. We're looking at growing reputation and visibility abroad, a key component in combating the increased competition piece, and being more active in their outreach to admitted students. So all three of those suggest institutions that are not sitting back and just going, woe is me, and what am I going to do, and how do we make a difference here? It's institutions that are seeing this success, if they aren't already named, they're doing so because they are becoming more active internationally, that they are growing their visibility and reputation abroad through partnerships and other ways that happens internationally. And they're also taking a much more engaging approach with their admitted students. And we'll talk more about that in the third news story that we're going to cover this week. But you see that the institutions that commit, that, hey, no, we're not going down without a fight. We're going to go be strong in what we and how we approach this issue, and not just wilt under the pressure of public opinion that maybe we should be clamping down more on immigration and that type of thing, and that we don't need these students in our country. And that's just a real signal to me in terms of where institutions are, where their heads are at in terms of which way they see things going. Is are they willing to commit themselves as an institution to engaging more with their international audiences and making an effort to become more involved in how they are reaching out to their admitted students and how they are becoming more active internationally. So if institutions that do that, they're more than likely going to be on that flat or increasing side of the equation for institutions. And the last piece I'll mention about this Inside Higher Ed event, there's a good colleague of mine, Rahul Chadha, of Study Portals. He's been in the game long enough. He has a great blog on his own, Doctor Education. And he has really taken it to the macro level on the global scale to see what's happening and what are some potential strategies for success. And for Rahul, what he talks about is his recruitment solution He calls it the HOPES strategy, which hope is not in and of itself is not a strategy, but the acronym HOPE, the way he outlines it here, is H for higher value institutions, that the higher value that institutions can offer students. And we're talking, he uses the example of Eastern Michigan, who recently reduced tuition rates for international students to the same as in-state rates. The O, standing for outreach, again, as the survey results from IIE showed, becoming more actively engaged in outreach to your prospective student audiences. The P for partnerships with third-party providers, universities, other organizations overseas that can help you build your brand, build your network. And E for investment institutions. And I don't know how that E works out for investment. Investment institutions that make in improving the experience of international students. So maybe that's the E, the experience piece, improving the experience. And that's related to services. And these are things that we've talked about here on this. All three, four of these items are things that we've talked about on this live chat over the last 6 months. And things that I certainly encourage my institutional partners and colleagues to consider is, what are you basing your recruitment strategies on internationally? Are they based on partnerships? Are they based on showing value, on improving services, on engaging more actively? What are you doing? Are you just doing the same old thing? And that's really where the rubber hits the road. And certainly everybody can benefit from what's from a deeper look at what they are doing institutionally and what others are doing successfully. So I think that's something we'll certainly cover more in the weeks and months to come. Larry, good question. Which degrees are sought most by international students? Right now in the United States, there are over 1 million internationals in the U.S. right now studying at our institutions or engaged in post-study work opportunities as part of their visa status. Right now, the numbers between those three categories are, if I'm not mistaken, we're looking at about 440,000, so a little over 44%, about 40% or so are undergraduate students, so associate or bachelor's degree seekers. Another 380,000 are going to be master's or doctoral level students, and the final category for optional practical training would be about 200,000. There's also a category of non-degree students that are coming either for a semester exchange or year-long exchange from their home institutions in their home countries, or maybe pursuing English language study in the United States for a short period of time. So non-degree. So that's what those folks would be coming in for. So hopefully that answers your question, Larry. The next piece that we'll cover is actually a story out of the UK, and it's in an academic journal, but really covers topics that I think are very relevant for US audiences as well. And the theme of the article, or the title of the article, is Brexit, Xenophobia, and International Students: How to Combat Public Paranoia Over Immigration. So outside of the Brexit piece, that those are certainly familiar themes for anyone who's been in international higher ed, or even just casual observers of what's going on in the United States now in terms of public opinion on immigration, on just on overseas of not folks who aren't American and what that means, what and how they are viewed in the United States, the paranoid or skeptical view of international students in a lot of circles. So in England, in the UK, they've had challenges like this over the last few years as well, particularly in the fallout from the Brexit vote almost 3 years ago now. You're seeing that similar themes played out in the US with immigration debates and the wall and all of these wonderful things that have popped up on our radar in the last couple of years. But in England and in the United Kingdom, there are significant waves. A lot of the folks who were pushing for Brexit were kind of anti-immigration folks, but also folks who just wanted to sever the kind of the ties to Europe in terms of regulations, in terms of tariffs, and all these things that they felt as seeing as intrusions on how they were running their own country. Which are perhaps separate, certainly separate from anything we're really experiencing here in the U.S. But certainly the immigration piece is a common theme both in the UK and in the UN, in the United States. So really, there the cultural xenophobia that exists in the UK towards international students, it all depends on how you talk about it. Because frankly, if you talk about international students are crowding out domestic students from university places, that's certainly a theme that we've heard in the UK, but it's also been one that's been pretty common here in the United States at state universities, particularly those that are publicly supported or publicly funded institutions. That it's, if you talk about it and ask the question in the survey, well, if should international students that are crowding out our own citizens from attending university really be allowed in? Should their numbers be capped and all of these things? That the way you pose a question is how you it will oftentimes lead your audience to the answer that you want them to have. But when you talk about it and the way they talk about it in the UK is, then they make the point is when you put it in terms that are self-interest terms to the audience that you're asking, when you're showing how, for example, international students help finance domestic students attend the university, and certainly those that are coming internationally pay a lot higher rates in the UK and certainly in the US as well at many institutions, particularly state institutions. So that those arguments can often have a lot of weight with local audiences. So, and the oftentimes the piece of these students are just coming here and they're going to take our jobs. Well, they're coming to fill jobs that frankly aren't being filled by domestic students in a lot of cases. And certainly in the UK, they're experiencing that. But you also see that in the US, where a lot of STEM field jobs in the United States are filled by international students, or either students are coming direct from overseas, or future employees coming direct from overseas on H-1B visas or L-1 visas, or students that continue on for study, work getting a job after graduation in STEM-related fields. And right now, almost 50% of international students in the United States are studying in STEM fields that have up to 3 years of work experience in their field after they graduate. There are numerous graduate departments in the United States in colleges and universities that are wouldn't exist without international students right now. So these students that are coming in, international students coming in, not only have great value economically to our institutions, but they prop up a lot of departments, and they provide a stream of jobs, a stream of people for jobs that aren't currently being filled by U.S. students, because the domestic population going into STEM fields has not been at the levels it needs to be to fill the available jobs. So international students have had to come in and fill that void. They come here for those jobs in the end run. End goal of many students that come to the U.S. is not only to get the experience that they can they need to advance their own careers, but they potentially get the jobs here in the United States that can potentially lead to future benefits for them. So it's really an issue that I think will continue to develop in the way in international ed circles in terms of how we talk about international students. Certainly NAFSA, last week they kicked off their Welcome to Succeed campaign, and I certainly support that with all respect for what they do and as an advocacy organization, and certainly if more members took advantage of the advocacy tools that they provide, this would be a fight that would be a lot easier to combat when we talk to our elected officials about the value of having immigration regulations that make it easier for international students to come to the United States, not harder, that allow them to take advantage of the benefits that are available to them, not restrict them further. So there's a lot out there that I wish more of my fellow international educators and the greater public at large, frankly, would be invested in. Those that have businesses in college towns or in towns that are have regular international student or student traffic, you're going to have international students, and they're a big part of your business. And if 10, 15% of your business suddenly goes away, you're going to be impacted as an empl as a business owner. So if you're in that kind of a situation, so it's really up to, and that's just the economic impact. I don't like to rely on that, as the major reason or the only reason why we should have international students in the United States, because it's clearly not. The real value of international students in the United States is from what they bring to our classrooms and to our students that have never traveled outside the United States, who have maybe never even have a passport, or you haven't left their state even. And these students exist out there, and they're the ones that are in desperate need of being prepared for the world that they're going to face after graduation when they go out into the working world that is increasingly global, that is increasingly international. So what are institutions doing to fight that fight and to defend their interests and what they do in educating the students of today for the jobs of tomorrow? And that's where international students bring the perspective to college campuses that you just can't buy, because the greater majority of U.S. students are not going abroad during their college years. They'll never have that experience unless they have students from other countries in their classroom. So it's really really critical that institutions don't drop the ball on this and will fight the fight that needs to be done to keep these students coming to our shores. So the final piece that I'll touch on today relates a bit to the previous two topics, particularly the first topic we discussed about what institutions that are seeing increases in their international student numbers, what they're doing to make that happen. One of the key factors in there is engaging more with their admitted students. And what does that look like? And frankly, here's where too many schools really have frustrations in their communications with international students, that if they don't have a CRM, if they don't have a communication plan, if they don't have either of those, they're really in trouble, because if they're relying on one person to send out emails personally to every prospective student inquirer, applicant, and admitted student, that's just too much to ask if you don't have a coordinated plan and a system to deliver those messages. And what this article, this latest article that I've just posted to, in the comments section on our Facebook page, discusses is what can institutions do, because personalization has been kind of the buzzword in admissions marketing for several years, and what that means. And personalization, and yeah, so you have a first name, you address them, dear so-and-so. But personalization, and maybe address them by their what country they're from or what their major is, or something that actually suggests that you know who they are and what they have to offer, and potentially be for your institution. And what this article does, it really looks at what institutions should be doing to help what the next, what they call, what this author calls the next frontier. And they talk about some student development theory, Schlossberg's work on marginality and mattering. Mattering is on one side of the spectrum, marginality is on the other side. So a lot of student development speak that I don't know, but certainly this author breaks down Schlossberg's five dimensions of mattering and how universities, colleges, can be leveraging these five areas to better connect with your prospective student audiences. And it does mean potentially a lot greater segmentation of your marketing efforts, a lot closer analysis of who your students are and categorizing them in various ways. So the article focuses on these five dimensions and how they can be implemented on university campuses. First one is attention, the feeling that one is noticed, so very basic one. And this is where you're really personalizing, that you're talking about a student's interest, whether it be academic or maybe extracurricular, if you're able to glean that from any of the student contact information you have and experience contacts you've had with them, that this is what the basic, very basic expectation that students have. The next level is importance, that not only do you recognize them as an individual and have unique interests and abilities, but that you care for them as an individual. that your institution will take that effort, make that effort to be follow-up calls after after a contact, either on campus from a visit or if somebody's visited that student abroad or at a college fair, checking in on how their college search is going in the early stages. Nothing huge and eventful, but just making sure that you're keeping them and letting them know that you still are caring about them, that you wonder how they're doing. The next one is ego extension. That's that what they're doing now in the process, these students are doing now in the process of applying to college, finding their home for university is going to make their parents, their aunts and uncles, their grandparents very proud, their brothers and sisters very proud of what they're doing. And that kind of is a something I think that any parent would certainly want to hear. Certainly makes them feel that they're part of the process too. And then also it goes on to dependence, that you as an institution need that student. And that's perhaps the hardest thing. We all can say that fairly easily in our communications with students, but are we actually giving them the student that they can play a vital role on our campus, that they have a lot to offer, instead of they should be honored to be on our campus? Are we reversing that and saying we can't wait to have you here because of your talents, your interests, your background? That's the piece in terms of as an extension of how we talk about our institutions, that institutions need to be moving towards. And the final piece is obviously for those that do decide to come to your institution, what are you just deluging them with more paperwork that they need to fill out for housing, for meal plans, whatever else it might be? Are you doing anything more to stand out with deposits? Are you just saying thank you rather than boom, here's a ton of forms, than just a ton of forms? So I think that there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle, and again, it takes a lot more work. But if you're really interested in enhancing your yield, enhancing your effectiveness of your communication with your prospective audiences, this is really something that is a must do. Muriel, thank you for joining us. Good to see one of my local peeps joining in. Hope you're well. And this piece on communication strategy with prospective student audiences is something that is almost taken for granted as a given, but too many institutions really don't have either the bandwidth, staffing, the facility in terms of a CRM and a communication plan that's well thought out and segmented to effectively reach international students, let alone domestic students that this article talks about. So really it's a matter of making sure that if you're gonna go down the road of international student recruitment, that you're committed to it as an institution, that you invest the resources that are necessary in terms of the communication strategies, the tools that you need to implement that, but also to increase your visibility as an institution, to work on the partnership development, and frankly, getting out there more to raise your visibility. That are you attending the major events in your target markets that you need to be in? So that's really the piece of the puzzle that I wish more institutions would get, and that when they buy into international students as a piece of their enrollment strategy, they're doing so with a commitment that really supersedes just the dollar signs, and that they see that this isn't just going to be if you send somebody to a college fair 1 year, they're automatically going to bring 10 students back the next year. If you've never been there before, that's just money wasted, and if you don't plan on going on a consistent basis. So really, from my perspective, it's a matter institutions really have a lot of moving parts that obviously they're dealing with in their how they're set up as institutions and organizations. But if they're committing to international, there's a lot of ways to do it right, do it wrong, excuse me. And there's very few ways that you can do it right if you're not equipped with the right resources and staff and frankly strategy to go about implementing what you're trying to do. So thank you, Larry. Thank you, Muriel, for joining me today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And for those of you who are catching us on the podcast, thanks for subscribing. And we look forward to bringing some more news to you next week. And if you haven't already, I encourage you to subscribe to the SMIE Consulting podcast that's available can download on all the major sites. I'm also popping up our website. That's at smieconsulting.org. And you can find all the various pieces there that we're talking about here. A lot of free resources for international educators. And encourage you all to subscribe to our newsletter. We have a newsletter comes out Monday mornings Eastern Time. Features not only the three stories that we cover here each week during the midweek roundup, but also a number of other top stories in international ed and social media that you might want to have a different take on. I certainly will get that through the newsletter that I send out, all the SMIE news that's fit to share. So I hope you can subscribe to that, and we look forward to seeing you again in the coming weeks and months. Take care.